This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiaoyik. With influenza cases seemingly on the rise in recent weeks, we look at how older people are particularly vulnerable to complications from this viral infection. And this is of concern, especially for those who also have coexisting chronic diseases like diabetes. So Dr. Nordiana Nordin, consultant geriatrician from Hospital Sungai Buloh, is here with us to shed more light on how influenza and diabetes can turn nasty when they come together and how these ought to be managed. Good afternoon, Dr. Diana. How are you today?
Good afternoon. I am good. Thank you.
Can we start with sort of a big picture look at trying to understand, because when a person grows older, lots of things are happening in the body. The body's not functioning as it used to, but specifically the impact of growing older on the immune system.
As we grow older, we know that immune system somehow drops. So hence, once an elderly patient or the aging population, when they get contracted with any diseases for that matter, the way they act, the immune system from the body reacts is much, much lower than the average population. So especially once they have some sort of non-communicable disease, such as chronic heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, for that matter, it complicates the whole situation. When they are infected with influenza, this condition worsens.
Okay. But are they more vulnerable to contracting an infectious disease like influenza compared to a younger person?
Of course, they are much, much more vulnerable in terms of percentage, both elderly and also the younger population less than 5 years old.
Mm.
These are the two extremes of...
Yes, the very young and
yes,
the
that's right.
older.
Yeah.
Why influenza, of the infectious diseases that they could contract, why are we concerned about influenza in particular?
The main reason is influenza, number one, is definitely preventable. But number two, it's so hazardous to the body. There is a lot of misconception about flu with the usual cold.
Yes.
So people tend to think that flu is cold.
That's right.
So they present to the hospital much, much later thinking that, you know, it's just a common cold. Flu is a common cold instead of influenza,
mm-hmm.
when this is obviously much, much more preventable. So when they come in late, they tend to develop complications as such. In the elderly population, once they are infected with influenza, the chances of recovery is lesser compared to the average population.
Mm.
So it takes a longer time to recover. There's lots of expenses in terms of medication, hospital stay. All of these are preventable. And one point that I need to add on here, the hospitalization rate for elderly population who contracts influenza is high. There's a lot of hospitalization money spent and mm-hmm. also mortality rate, which can go up to 79%, especially in diabetics.
All right. More than can go up to 70%
yeah, yeah.
if you also have diabetes.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And that's something we want to go into shortly, understanding, you know, what's happening, right, when two of these are sort of playing off each other.
Yeah.
But coming back to, yeah, you know, we use the word cold and flu interchangeably.
Mm.
In fact, we always say flu when it could be the cold.
Yes.
But then the risk there is that we're not seeking attention when it could potentially be the flu. But how do we know that the symptoms we have is actually due to the flu rather than just the common, more benign cold?
The common cold, normally one would present with runny nose, cough, a little bit of sore throat, plus minus fever.
Mm-hmm.
But in influenza, you tend to get prolonged fever on top of this current symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And they also develop headache. They can get lots of body aches and joint pains
mm-hmm.
Together with prolonged fever.
Yeah. Are the differences, apart from the different symptoms
mm-hmm.
To be expected between the common cold and flu, what are some of the other differences?
Obviously, a common cold one, common cold usually is self-remitting. So with or without treatment, symptoms will normally go away and, you know, patients will recover on their own.
Within what period of time?
A minimum of 48 hours. Right. It can go up to about 72 hours. Mm-hmm. But in influenza, the symptoms may or may not remit, but the symptoms may last right up to 7 days. Mm. So usually, even without hospitalization, they may warrant at least a visit to the GP or the doctors to seek medical attention.
But, you know, if you wait 7 days, especially for an elderly patient, is that too long already?
Yes, it is too long because you never know when they can actually develop complications from the influenza itself.
So within 24 to 72 hours actually is when you'd want to sort of be able to give
watch
them...
Watch for the symptoms. Mm. But like you and I, you know, if you develop fever, a bit of cough and sore throat, you may not even seek attention, isn't it?
Yes.
And you tend to recover after a couple of days. Mm-hmm. But if these symptoms actually prolong and you don't recover with the additional symptoms that I've mentioned before, then one should actually seek. So maybe seek attention. So maybe you want to look at about 3 days.
Mm. And anything in particular among the older patients to look out for?
Yeah, older population, they tend to present slightly different from the average population. That's because of their immunity, immunoinnocence, immunity in their body.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when they develop complications from influenza, such as, for example, pneumonia, they may not come in with typical cough and fever. They may just come in with someone who presents with acute confusional state and delirious or suddenly from a fall. But in actual fact, they have had influenza prior to that and now develop pneumonia, but not presenting with the actual symptoms.
Okay. Yeah. And that means when they come to your attention, they've sort of reached a pretty extreme phase already.
Once they need hospitalization, The challenging part is to know the exact symptoms prior to that.
Yes.
When they come in late or they present with other symptoms instead of the usual symptoms of influenza.
Okay. Mm. I mean, is there any way to know what to look out for, especially for family members or caregivers?
Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, I think we need to know the difference between the common flu and, you know, this misconception of, common cold and the misconception of flu.
Mm-hmm.
The symptoms, the initial symptoms. So they tend to deteriorate very fast in within the first 24 to 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
From that fever, cough, sore throat and runny nose, then they also have an additional headache, joint pains, and the fever may prolong. That's something that one should look out for.
Okay. Is pneumonia the most common complication of influenza for the elderly?
In general, respiratory illnesses, but yes, pneumonia.
Okay.
Also, apart from that, they can actually develop neurological complications such as inflammation of the brain. In our medical terms, and we use meningitis or encephalitis.
Right. Yeah. Okay. How common is it for what could have potentially been a very manageable flu to progress to, you know, something like meningitis or even organ failure?
I can't give you the exact percentage here, especially in our country.
Mm.
But we do have probably about, if I give a ball figure, maybe about 10 to 15% of this hospital admissions, which was done, if I'm not mistaken, this study was done in either Thailand or Singapore, where they actually developed such complications in elderly population.
Right, okay.
Unfortunately, like I say, when they present later, or they do not present with the actual typical symptoms of influenza, once they head into the hospital, doctors may not get the idea of him or her having had influenza. Hence, the test may not be run on them.
Mm.
So we're not capturing that data, that figure.
I see. Yeah. And also, you are not able, or rather the doctor is not able to target the treatment appropriately.
That's right.
They're probably treating other aspects.
They come in with complications, yeah? So we would treat the complication instead of the actual thing. Because once they come in with pneumonia, we would treat pneumonia. So most of the time, when they develop pneumonia in that range of complication, they tend to get secondary bacterial infection on top of the viral infection.
Right.
So that is the one that warrants treatment.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What can you do to treat influenza in an elderly patient?
Once they are in and we do suspect that they may have had influenza, even without running the test on that very minute, we will start antiviral. Of course, with other secondary infections such as bacterial infection, then we'll add on antibiotics. Mm-hmm. However, having said that, I think the best remedy is obviously prevention rather than knowing them coming into the disease itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have already briefly touched on the fact that, what could be potentially, of course, it's preventable. What could potentially be manageable would turn very ugly when the patient has other chronic conditions, and diabetes was one of the ones that you brought up. So after the break, I'd like to go into that, or what's happening when diabetes is so prevalent in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening when somebody has diabetes and develops the flu? How is that exacerbating the control, or rather causing the control of diabetes to deteriorate? So we'll go for a quick break. I have Dr. Nordiana Nordin, consultant geriatrician from Hospital Sungai Buloh, in the studio with me. We're talking about specifically flu and diabetes among the elderly. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. In the studio with me, Dr. Nordiana Nordin, consultant geriatrician from Hospital Sungai Buloh. We've been talking about influenza and the elderly, but what we actually want to do is to try and link it to coexisting chronic conditions that many elderly people in Malaysia also have. So things like diabetes, which is something that we will zoom in on. Dr. Diana has already explained why influenza is of particular concern. It is preventable, but when an elderly person gets influenza, the risk of health complications are really high, and you could be looking at things like pneumonia, but at the severe end, it would be things like inflammation of the brain, and also prolonged hospitalization, very long recovery period that comes along with it. What are the risk factors that make an elderly person more vulnerable to developing complications from the flu?
Number one, being elderly itself is already a risk factor. Mm. Being the aging population above 65 years old, that is. Number two, if they do have an existing non-communicable disease, such as diabetes, hypertension, chronic heart disease, they tend to be in a higher risk, higher prevalence of developing influenza. Reason being, once they have all these diseases on board as their comorbids, their immunity drops down further.
Okay. Is that regardless of how well controlled their chronic condition is?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. So we'll focus on diabetes for the purpose of this conversation. And, if you could give us some idea of, why diabetes is, for you as a geriatrician, it would be a significant issue that you want to, make sure it's addressed. Do we have any idea how prevalent is it among the elderly population in Malaysia?
Well, if you talk about the global prevalence of diabetes overall in the world is about 4.7 to 8.5% in adult population. And if you narrow down to Malaysia, we actually have a higher percentage compared to the global report, which is about 9.8% in adult population. But the exact elderly population is not stated in the WHO global report. However, we do have a higher mortality rate among those with diabetes. It's about 3,000 odd, both in females, and another 3,080 died due to diabetes in females as well.
And that's in a year.
Yeah, that's in a year of the said study.
Do we have any indication of how well controlled diabetes is among our elderly population? And this could be from your observation, your clinical observation as well.
If you were to ask me honestly, treating diabetes is a challenge, especially in the elderly population. And number one, not just because of their mere understanding. And this differs from hospitals to hospitals or state to state because of education level and their understanding of diabetes and complications. From where I work, we do find it challenging treating them. And number two, once they have reached this age, they tend not to be on oral hypoglycemic agents anymore. They tend to be on insulin. So it leaves a stigma on them, you know, getting insulin injections, which is being done by them or the relatives or caregivers at home. Again, that's pretty challenging. Some of them may not want to inject themselves, or some of them are actually scared to use the needles themselves. This brings to them coming in with uncontrolled diabetes, for that matter.
And then we throw influenza into the mix. And because that simple infection can be so common, well, not a simple infection actually, that infection can be so common. So how does influenza complicate matters in somebody with diabetes?
That's a very good question. It goes in two ways, two methods. Number one, it complicates the diabetic status itself. It affects the metabolism of insulin in the body. So, you know, once it's affected, the sugar level will go haywire. A person may develop an overtly uncontrolled diabetes once they contract influenza. And of course, the other extreme is they develop complication of the uncontrolled diabetes itself, which may lead to death. One of the terms that we would use in this context is diabetic ketoacidosis, when they go in severely uncontrolled and they may come in with multi-organ damage. Now, with uncontrolled diabetes, so this is a vicious cycle, so now that they are infected and they develop uncontrolled diabetes, it further affects the insulin metabolism. And on top of that, the immune system drops down further. Hence, they now get, they are very vulnerable in developing some other complications from influenza. In this case, again, I would stress on respiratory complications such as pneumonia.
Yeah, so there's a feedback loop to that as well.
Yes, it's a vicious cycle.
And both conditions are just, it's just making everything very, very difficult. So is it, I'm assuming the situation is similar, that they usually would come in quite late, present to you quite late, even with the influenza symptoms as well?
Most times, from my experience, yes.
Or do they come in when actually the diabetes has become uncontrolled and it's the complications?
The tricky part is in diabetes, the symptoms, again, like in elderly patients, you may not get the typical symptoms of flu, so they may just come in with uncontrolled diabetes. And then you detect that, oh, there's a bit of infection which is pointed out on the blood results. And one would want to revisit the history, the presenting illness prior to that, and look into what is causing this raised white cell count, for instance. And then you find out, he or she now has contracted a bit of pneumonia or some respiratory illnesses coming to it, but they don't present with it. They just come in with purely uncontrolled diabetes.
Yeah. I mean, what if you only managed the diabetes without identifying the respiratory, problems? Mm-hmm. Does that mean that you are still leaving the underlying problem to fester?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Usually when a diabetic patient comes in with either uncontrolled diabetes, high diabetes or low diabetes, we need to find the underlying cause to it.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to find the underlying causes. We can't just disregard it altogether. Okay. So one of the many things that, one of the many investigations that we would send is look at whether there's any raised white cell counts to know if there's any infection on board or some other causes to it.
Okay. Yeah. So then what would be your cause of action there?
We would definitely treat the diabetes itself, okay, manage accordingly, and then treat the underlying cause. Mm. Yeah, in this case, if it's co-infected with influenza, then you'll have to start antiviral.
Okay.
And try to prevent complications as much as possible.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, is there a risk also of perhaps antiviral medication being less effective if they are on diabetes treatment, insulin and all that?
That is not being stated just as yet. Mm. But obviously, what is being recommended the moment we find out, this person has contracted influenza, we need to start antiviral ASAP.
Mm.
Yeah, if you wait longer, it may not be as effective.
Mm, okay. Yeah. And so then what window are we looking at before we can expect recovery in the patient? And for the diabetes to, get back under control?
To control the diabetes, I'm talking about hospital admissions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are patients who are warded. You may need a grace period of about 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
This would be with, it differs from case to case basis. Most of the time, we jump in and start continuous insulin to really bring down the sugars mm-hmm. tightly. And simultaneously, we would start them on antivirals or antibiotics indicated if there is secondary bacterial infection.
Mm.
So to bring down the sugars, you may need to have about 2 to 3 days.
Mm.
Yeah, but if you only treat one thing alone and disregard the rest, the recovery rate is going to be much, much lower.
I mean, for you, and if you already talked about how challenging it is to get your elderly patients to manage their diabetes mm-hmm. well, mm-hmm. and then, you throw complications like this into the mix.
Yep.
I'm trying to get at sort of what are the other challenges with a cohort of patients like this, where it's not just the clinical issues, but there's a lot of psychosocial issues involved.
Definitely,
as well.
Yeah.
I mean, what are some of those difficulties that you have to navigate?
From where I work and the area of vicinity, I feel that the awareness is not that great. Information about influenza probably is not greatly disseminated to the public. That's for sure. But of course, the understanding that we're talking about amongst the elderly, probably it's also lower.
Mm.
Again, this differs state by state or area, differences between urban and also rural area understanding, and education level plays an important role.
Mm.
So I feel in average, the awareness is not there. So when there's no awareness, this population may not know the importance of, the urgency of being treated or the urgency of visiting a GP or a doctor when symptoms come in.
Mm.
Number two, our elderly population, there's two divers. One who actually live on their own, okay? And number two, who actually live back with their kids,
mm-hmm.
yeah? So kids are the caregivers, their children are the caregivers. Perhaps in this population, the caregivers may be well
more aware.
Yeah, more aware of the current situation. So it's much easier to detect. But if you're looking at this small percentage of those elderly living alone, then this is where the problem comes in.
Mm.
They may not be able to reach out and call up for help if they're actually in need, because by the time they come in, it's late again, because mm-hmm. they think it's just a common cold when it's actually a flu.
Yep.
Yeah. So living alone causes lots of psychosocial issues as well.
Yeah.
You know, they have depression on board, and then you have this dementia, if you've heard of it, you know, which is highly prevalent among the elderly population, and you mix it up with with all this coming into picture, it makes things more difficult.
And you've said many times, influenza is preventable.
Yes.
It is vaccination that can prevent it.
Yes.
Is the vaccine 100% effective in preventing you from contracting influenza?
It won't 100% prevent you from contracting influenza, but it definitely reduces the chances of you contracting influenza a whole lot. So what happens is, once the patient gets the influenza vaccine, if I give you an example of a chronic obstructive pulmonary disease patient who comes in with frequent exacerbation in the hospital, for instance, at least about 4 or 5 times of exacerbation, the moment they start getting a yearly annual vaccination, this may actually reduce to perhaps just once, one exacerbation per year. So this reduces the hospitalization and also reduces the further complications from the disease itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, presumably because the vaccine just prevents or largely reduces flu infections and then its complications, so it is then able to reduce the likelihood of the uncontrolled diabetes.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And of course, it's not only that, because the moment the person is actually vaccinated, you are talking about preventing the whole household as well. Okay? Because, you know, we know that elderly and also the younger population are susceptible to this infection.
Mm-hmm.
When they are vaccinated, you're talking about reducing this being infected to other household or family members. So you are actually treating not only the individual, but you're treating the community as well.
Yeah. But the flu vaccine is seasonal. And like you said, you have to get it every year.
Mm-hmm.
If you could give a little bit of explanation about what that means, you know, with other vaccines, you get it once, you know, you get a booster maybe, but that's it.
Yep.
So what is it about the flu that, you know, makes the vaccine so different?
In a country which has four seasons, influenza is highest during winter and spring, okay? But in a country like us, we don't have any seasons, so influenza happens throughout the year.
Right.
Hence, for us Malaysians or some countries in Southeast Asia where it's tropical season, we need to take vaccine on a yearly basis. It doesn't matter which time of the year. But once it's taken, the flu vaccine takes about 2 weeks to act up, okay, to become active in the body, and then it lasts you for a year.
Okay.
But for those who wish to travel outside and who's not had any vaccination, and you wish to travel about winter to a certain country, okay, or just prior to winter, then you're advised to take it at least 2 weeks in advance prior to taking the flight off to the country.
All right. Are there specific vaccines for the older population or for those who have, let's say, chronic conditions?
No, the vaccine is the same throughout for any diseases.
Okay.
And what we advise is the quadrivalent vaccine,
which
means it covers both influenza A and influenza B with the four different or multiple strains. Okay. Those days, we talk about trivalent vaccination. So trivalent only touches, say, two influenza A and one type of influenza B. Okay. But the quadrivalent now covers both influenza A and B, and it's a broader spectrum.
Okay. All right. Are there other vaccines that older people should consider getting as well, so they get, you know, broader protection against infectious diseases in general?
There is also one vaccine, pneumococcal vaccine, which we also, again, we recommend for both elderly and the younger population, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. these are the ones who are susceptible to pneumococcal infection.
Okay.
Some other vaccination which is not mandatory would be things like the traveler's vaccination, like for meningitis, so on and so forth.
Mm. Yeah. And then that's if you're traveling.
Yes.
And especially to certain endemic countries.
Yes.
I think the most important question, though, is where do people get this vaccine? And especially to make it accessible, to ensure that it is accessible for people who can't afford to go to private hospitals or clinics.
Mm-hmm. One can get this vaccine in the Ministry of Health, in the outpatient department, mostly in Klinik Kesihatan. Mm-hmm. Certain Klinik Kesihatans, they have made the vaccines readily available. But for those who are admitted to the hospital, they are not advised to take the vaccination immediately. Mm-hmm. So normally we would tell them that, okay, you have been cured from so-and-so disease at this moment, you are discharged. A couple of weeks later, then we'll arrange for an appointment in the outpatient department to get the vaccination. Mm. However, we actually cater most of these vaccinations mainly towards those with chronic respiratory illnesses like COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, due to the cost and also the minimal number that we receive. But of course, in the recent months, I think there's a pool of vaccination supply coming into the hospital. So we have a broader case-to-case basis that we can offer.
All right, but that's in the hospital.
Yes, that's in the hospital.
If you were to go to the Klinik Kesehatan, you can actually ask for the flu vaccine.
Yes, you can actually request for the flu vaccine.
Okay. Where can people go for more information about influenza and vaccination?
You can go into the website that is readily available, which is www.actoflove.ifl.my.
And that will have information just about perhaps where you can go.
General information on influenza itself, talking about influenza vaccine, all in this Act of Love website.
Mm. All right. Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Dr. Nordiana Nordin, consultant geriatrician from Hospital Sungai Buloh, about flu and diabetes in the elderly, and especially the importance of getting the annual flu vaccination. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.